Dan, you just got married, right?
I did. I got married a week ago Friday down in Las Vegas.
Wow. Congratulations.
Of all places. Thank you very much, sir.
And I have to ask, of course, did you meet your wife on an online dating site?
You know, I did not, but there was a technological component to how we met, and that is, so she is a yoga instructor, and I met her in a yoga class. And when I first asked her out on a date, she said no because she had a boyfriend. And so, you know, a couple of years passed, and I was on Facebook one day, and she popped up in that right-hand column of the people you may know because you have a friend in common or something. And so we started to chat, and it turned out that she was single, and so was I. And so that's how we reconnected. So it wasn't online dating per se, but I think without Facebook, I would not be married to her right now.
So there is that thing that you check on Facebook, are you in a relationship or not? I assume you check that pretty fast.
After we started dating?
Even before.
I think Facebook has the option to put nothing, and I can't remember if I had put single or nothing. I mean, certainly Facebook gives you the option to use Facebook as a dating site, and, you know, arguably Facebook is the largest dating site in the world. It's just not billed as such, although now it seems that it might be increasingly with last week's announcement.
So, I mean, your story is really interesting because, I mean, what you're suggesting is that this new world that we live in, people are not just meeting online, but they're also getting all kinds of information from social networking sites like Facebook. In fact, I mean, in your situation, it worked out pretty well, but I could imagine there are other cases where you might get more information about the person you're dating than you really want.
Sure, and I think that's about the effects of the wider web, certainly of social media, but also of search engines. I mean, you know, if say you meet someone on Match.com, once you figure out their name, then you put their name into Google and you can find out everything that's available to be found out about them on the web. You find a resume, you find some essay they wrote a decade ago when they were angry or a different person or in a different mood, and maybe it's informative or maybe it isn't, but you're going to make of that information whatever you want to make of it. So I think that all that information can be beneficial, and it can also really mess with how relationships are formed.
Well, and it goes even further than that. I mean, if you actually are starting to go out with someone and your Facebook friends, you can check out who that person's been corresponding with. You can go back to the personal history there. I mean, presumably there's a lot of information on the Facebook site.
Yeah, one of the things that I found in the course of my reporting for the book was that, you know, I would have these long conversations, these long interviews with users, and we would talk about their online dating experience. But then inevitably, almost always, we would also talk about Facebook and how Facebook played a role in the formation of relationships that, you know, began online. So say, you know, you meet someone on an online dating site and you go on a date or two and then you become Facebook friends. Maybe, you know, you become Facebook friends right away. Maybe you wait a few dates. And then all of a sudden, before you're really, you know, before you fully know this person, you're exposed to their entire social web on Facebook. And meanwhile, you don't really know any of their friends. You don't know what the context for these relationships are. So say you're a woman and you're dating a guy and all of a sudden you're Facebook friends and he puts a picture up on Facebook of himself with a woman. Or maybe a woman puts a picture up and she tags him in the picture. There's a question. Who is that woman? Is it his sister? Is it a girl that I should be threatened by? So there's definitely a lot of that, and I think all this information is affecting things like paranoia, you know, stress at the beginning of relationships. And like I said, it can be useful to get to know someone, but when taken to the extreme, it can also, I think, cause a little bit of problem.
You know, I have to say, this whole world of online dating is pretty foreign to me. I mean, I've been married for nearly 20 years, so you'll have to help me out here. There's a fascinating figure that you have in your book. You say that about a fifth of all new relationships begin with people meeting online.
Yes.
So what kinds of dating sites are out there?
Oh, I mean, there's a dating site for everything now. I think the big ones, the big brand name ones, are the ones that a lot of folks have heard about. Your Match.coms, your eHarmonies, your OkCupids, Plenty of Fish. These are sites that have communities of millions of people on them. But then once you go beyond that, there are over 1,400 dating sites in the U.S. alone, and thousands more abroad that pretty much cater to every interest, hobby, fetish, fringe thing you can possibly imagine. Some of which would be okay to talk about on this show, and some of which probably wouldn't.
So some of these sites are basically for people who want to meet up for sex.
Many of them are, sure.
And others are for people who want to meet the partner of their dreams.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that dating sites, after they've been around for a while, they acquire a brand similar to how a bar or some other real-world meeting venue might. So if you go to a town, there's a bunch of bars in the town, and each of the bars will have a reputation for a different kind of socializing. One of the bars might be a place where people do a lot of drinking, and there's a lot of singles, and there's a lot of hooking up. And another bar may be a little bit more classy, might be a bit more expensive. It might have a different kind of reputation for people who are more serious about their love lives, whatever. I think with the rise of online dating, though, the pie just gets sliced much thinner. So now there is a bar, so to speak, on the web for people who are Star Trek fans. There is even a bar for young men who want to date a grandmother, believe it or not. It is all over the map.
Do most people who date online or use dating online sites, are they on more than one?
Many are. I haven't seen numbers on that. That's sort of an anecdotal thing that I got out of my own reporting, and also when you talk to online dating executives, they will often ask their users, are you on another site? And it seems like the average online dater might be on a couple sites.
And is there an etiquette here in terms of if you start dating someone that you are supposed to be exclusive with that person? Or how do people negotiate that question?
I think that question, which certainly has existed for all of human history, has become much more complicated now with online dating. And it's because the relationship is starting out of no common bonds, right? So where before maybe you met someone at your church, you met someone at the office, and you'd have common social circles. So your relationships would kind of be out in the open. Maybe you didn't have the conversation within the first 3 weeks of are we exclusive, but you'd sort of know because you'd hear rumors going around. And if you wanted to be seen other people, you'd have to be pretty careful about how you went about that if you didn't want to tell the other person. Now, because you can meet people through dating sites and have no common social bonds, it's become easier to skirt the conversation and to not really suffer the consequences. So one of the things that I heard a lot from the users that I spoke to was that, I would find a relationship with someone who I met online, and then it was really weird because we would eventually have to say, okay, are you taking down your profile now? Should I take down my profile? And it's just a new kind of conversation that hasn't really existed before.
I suppose there are some distinct advantages to using these online dating sites. I mean, the obvious one is that, you can widen your search and, there's more possibility to meet new people. The other is you can get a lot of information about the person you're going to date before you even meet. You can sort of skip through that, the initial meeting that, where you would ordinarily be gathering that information. You can sort of start ahead in the game, I would think.
Yeah, and that information is going to have different kinds of quality to it. Sometimes the information, when you're getting, incomplete information and information that's taken out of context, you might use that information in a way that's not accurate. And an example of that, for instance, would be the example that I gave earlier. Someone's on Facebook. They see a person they're dating post a picture with someone of the opposite sex. And the question arises, is that a threat to our relationship? Is that a friend or a sister or a cousin? And people, I think, tend to become fairly paranoid naturally. So when you see the incomplete information, I think that the instinct is to make the worst out of it. And people, there is a certain amount of stress, I think, that goes along with meeting someone online because of that.
Yeah. Now, my understanding is that some of the online dating sites make the claim that they are scientific. They have some sort of algorithm that matches up people who are meant to be together or have a good chance of hitting it off. And so this raises the obvious question, is there a science to online dating?
That's probably one of the more interesting questions in the world of online dating right now. There is a vast divide between what psychological science and the academics say is possible and what sites like, you know, eHarmony, for instance, which says it does scientific matching, what they say is possible. So a site like eHarmony will say, we can find you maybe not a soulmate, although they have used that word in their press in the past, but we can find you a compatible mate. We can find you someone to marry. The academics say over the last century of relationship science, there's no proven ability for that. There's no ability to take strangers, to take people who've never met and say, okay, you and you, you can go off and have a successful 50-year marriage together. I think at the moment, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle because just anecdotally, again, if you talk to a lot of online dating users, and these are more the enthusiasts who do have success with the technology, they will tell you often that they have been sort of amazed and surprised at how accurate the sites have become in predicting not necessarily lifetime compatibility, but how well you may hit it off on a first date. And I think as the technology progresses and evolves, their abilities to predict will probably improve. And it could end up, you know, you could end up with a very interesting situation where, you know, the industry, the online dating industry, the technology is actually leading the way and the academics are sort of taking their information from the sites and saying, oh, wait, maybe there is an ability that we were not able to show in the past because we didn't have all this data that's now available through these sites.
What kinds of data do these sites use? I mean, what goes into the algorithms?
Many, many things go into the algorithms. Some of it is explicit information. So if you sign up on most sites these days, there are some sites that will ask you nothing when you sign up. You need to post a picture and say what your age is and say where you live. But the majority of sites have you input some kind of information. They might ask you 5 questions. They might ask you 500 questions about yourself, about what you're looking for. And they use that in order to match you up. Other sites will do what is called these days behavioral matching. So they say, look, people are not very good at assessing themselves. They're not even very good at telling you what they want because they don't know what they want. So we'll be more accurate and we'll be more helpful if we just watch them on our site for a while, see how they behave.
What would be an example of that, of the site actually somehow knowing what someone wants that person doesn't even know him or herself?
Well, here's an interesting example. If you talk to online dating executives, they will say that there seems to be a phenomenon among men where a man will sign up for a site and he's asked what he's looking for. Are you looking for a one-night stand? Are you looking for marriage? Are you looking for a long-term relationship, a short-term relationship? Are you looking for a pen pal, et cetera, et cetera? And there seems to be a societal pressure for a man to say that he's looking for marriage regardless of what he's actually looking for. And so if he's not actually looking for marriage, that will sort of mess up the algorithms on the site. That will mess up the success of the matching because they will be matching this guy based on something he won't actually want, and he's going to be disappointed, and certainly the women that he gets matched up will be. But if they can watch him on the site and say, okay, this guy said he was interested in marriage, but he's actually sending messages to a lot of the women who say they're interested in a short-term relationship. So if they can see that behavior, then they can modify accordingly.
So what would you say online dating sites are best at right now?
I think what online dating sites should aspire to is making a compatible first date. I mean, if you can get people to hit it off on a first date, I think that's a fairly amazing improvement over all the rest of dating in, you know, in human history. if you can go on Match.com, for instance, and you go on 10 first dates and 5 of the 10 go pretty well, maybe they don't lead to a second date. Maybe they don't lead to anything. Maybe they lead to a 3-month relationship. But if they lead to a successful first date, I think that's an improvement for most people.
Yeah, you don't have to go through that, at least as much of the pain of the awkward first date that you've been set up for instance.
Sure, because I don't know. I mean, I've been set up before on blind dates, and I think that a lot of us have. And oftentimes, when you're being set up on a blind date, what is the criteria that your friends are using? Usually it's one thing, and that it's you're single. And hey, you're single, and I have this other friend over here who's single, so you guys should totally go out. And of course, it's based on nothing other than your relationship status. And I think that an online dating site can at least improve on that.
It seems a big question here is whether people really know what they want. I mean, they might fill out the necessary questions on the dating site, but are they actually in touch with their true desires?
If you ask online dating industry people, they will say for the most part no, depending on who you talk to. Sites that favor the behavioral matching obviously approach it with a philosophy that people don't know what they want and that let's not ask them much. Let's just see how they behave and we will be able to tell them what they want. I think that partly has to do with online dating and it partly has to just do with relationships in general. I don't know that people were any better at understanding what they wanted before online dating came along. I mean, even if you are out there generally looking for someone to marry, you might get set up on a date or you might be asked out or you might ask someone out and you go on the date and you see how it goes. And maybe it goes horribly or maybe it goes well, but it doesn't go smashingly. And so it doesn't turn into marriage, but it turns into a short relationship. And you can't really understand that until you've gone through it. But if you were, say, asked beforehand, it would be very hard to answer. You could say, well, I think I'm looking for marriage. But then you go on the date and it turns out to be something less than marriage, which might be perfectly okay. But you wouldn't have known beforehand. And I think I think that online dating as a technology is just exposing that reality of human nature because it is forcing you to say up front because they have to distinguish based on something.
You know, the interesting question here is whether people who do this enough actually get a better idea of what they really want. In other words, the online dating site might think, I really know what he wants, but maybe that person sort of through using this technology will sort of figure it out himself.
I hope that's true. I mean, I like online dating. I think online dating is a good thing because it means there's less loneliness in the world. And I think that if people can get out there and meet other people and have your horrific, embarrassing moments, but also have some successes, and through that process of experience, I think hopefully you become more talented at relationships and you're better able to have a happy one, whether it's with someone you met online or someone that you meet offline.
Okay, so they're pretty good at getting you a good first date. What about beyond that?
I think that beyond that, it's up to you. Certainly anyone who's ever dated knows that it's a huge leap between hitting it off on a first date or feeling that spark on a first date and long-term compatibility. And I think beyond the first date, it's up to the user. I think that the sort of utopic promise of online dating is that maybe by arranging enough successful first dates for you, it will give you the experience you need to find a happy relationship.
Now, I would think one of the challenges for people who've done a lot of online dating, who have experience in this, is that even once they start a new relationship, and let's just say that's what they're interested in, they want either a somewhat short-term relationship, maybe a long-term relationship, that there would always be this temptation to want something better, to sort of go back and because there are a lot of fish in the pond and, you might want to check this out and just see what else is out there. And I'm wondering if there's any data available to examine the long-term efficacy of online dating.
Well, this is a big theme of the book, And one of the things that I attempted to do with the book was to look at what I call the datasphere, the entire world of online dating technology, from Facebook to Match.com, et cetera, and to figure out what this means for human relationships. And it's not so much about eHarmony versus Match or Facebook versus, you know, a hookup site. It's more just about the efficiency, the meeting efficiency that these sites have achieved. And what I found in my reporting, speaking to both men and women, speaking to both younger people and older people, was that they found themselves dating a lot more when they went online than they had in the past because they could. And the thesis that I sort of advance in the book is that for a certain kind of suboptimal relationship, or, you know, a relationship that's sort of on the fence, and we all know friends that I think, you know, are in these kinds of relationships, the ones where everyone around you thinks you should leave the relationship, but you stay in it, and maybe you stay in it for several reasons, but maybe one of the reasons is that you don't feel like there are any alternatives. I think that online dating will decrease the commitment levels in those relationships, and that you will see people hopping around more and more. And I think that the result of that is that you will wind up with a higher bar for happiness in relationships. That is, you'll wind up with a world of better relationships. But almost by definition, you'll also wind up with a world of more relationship breakup. And that was kind of the point of the excerpt that ran in The Atlantic last month, which spurred on a lot of debate.
I mean, that's sort of a fascinating question of whether we as a culture are developing a higher bar for what makes a good relationship. I mean, what is it that you're willing to commit to?
I think it's a fascinating question because it gets right down to, you know, the heart of things. I think that people who are in happy relationships, whether that relationship is a marriage or whether it's something else, I don't think they're going to be hanging out at online dating sites looking for the next best thing. Because I think that if you're in a happy relationship, you know, one of the benefits of being in a happy relationship is that you've sort of taken care of that part of your life, and now let's go and focus on other things. And I'm happy with this person. I don't want to look for someone else. But of course, there's a lot of relationship breakup out there, and so not every relationship is like that. A lot are not. A lot are on the fence. A lot are kind of subprime.
Well, and then there are a lot in the middle. There's a whole gray area there.
And then there's a whole gray area,
how
and
happy
it's so
is
subjective.
Happy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think for the ones that tend towards unhappy, I think that the existence of online dating technology will challenge those relationships. And I think for the most part that may be a good thing.
Now, there's also new technology that is changing this whole business of online dating as we speak. For instance, you talk about mobile dating. I mean, among gay men, you write Grindr has been a way for people to know who's available right now and within a certain geographic area. And apparently, this was so popular that during the 2012 Olympics, the server crashed because it was so heavily used. And they've just launched a similar app for straight people.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about this.
Well, I think there's been a lot made of sort of the mobile dating phenomenon because when people think about it, they can, you know, I think their imaginations run wild. They sort of imagine people meeting on the fly, which was sort of the Grindr phenomenon, or which really, I guess, is the Grindr phenomenon. It's this idea that, hey, I've got 15 minutes to grab some lunch in Midtown. Who's within 400 feet that wants to join me for lunch and, you know, and or, you know, dessert. But I think that will happen to some extent. There will be this sort of meeting on the fly, especially for younger people who don't see that technology as strange as other people might who are a little bit older and who are not accustomed to it. But I think the really important thing about mobile dating technology is that it will allow dating sites to acquire a category of data that they haven't been able to acquire yet, and that is people's post-date reaction to the date. So before, when you arrange an online date through your laptop or the desktop and then you went out on the date, it was very hard to get users to return to the computer and to sort of provide an assessment of how it went because people just didn't really behave that way. A day would pass, a couple of days would pass, they'd return to their computer, and they just didn't want to discuss how the date went, regardless of how it went. But now that people are going to be using these mobile apps, whether the whether it's a location-based app or not, they'll be leaving the date with their smartphone in their hand. And even if they can just provide, say, a thumbs up or a thumbs down sort of feedback to the site, that's a category of information that could potentially enrich these algorithms a lot.
Who would then have access to that information about how the date went?
Well, it'd be the people who are running these sites and who are trying to make, you know, their matching systems as accurate as possible. So they might say, you know, we match these folks up on a date because of X, Y, and Z reasons. But we have no idea how the date went. Even though, you know, now they might say, okay, we matched these two people up because we thought they were fantastic. But in fact, they both gave a thumbs down. Okay, so we can use that data to now make it more accurate that, okay, at least for this data point, when this whole world of personality characteristics and desires, et cetera, meets this other world of personality characteristics, it turns out not to be a good match. And maybe for one couple, that piece of information isn't that valuable. But if you have that kind of information for a billion dates, you may be able to move even psychological science forward a bit.
You know, I have to say, as I listen to you, it's kind of fascinating to hear how much this world of dating has changed. I mean, just to sum up what we've been talking about, you can now browse through millions of dating profiles, searching for people who might be your romantic ideal. You can broadcast your location and availability to other people who are looking to have a date or casual sex. You can watch what your partner is doing online. How do you see the world of dating in the 21st century now?
I think that online dating has been probably the most important innovation in meeting ever in human history. And of course, a lot of people out there will hear me say that and you know, they'll think, well, of course he's going to say that because he's, you know, he's out there trying to sell a book and he's got to make this phenomenon seem as important as possible. But after all the reporting and all the research that I did and, you know, speaking to so many people and also being of a generation that has come to rely fairly heavily on this technology, I just think it's very much a game changer for you know, all the reasons that we've been speaking about.
Which then leads us back to that question we were talking about before. I mean, what does this say about the future of happy relationships, of divorce, of questions about monogamy or open relationships? Do you see online dating pushing in any particular direction there?
Well, what I think it does is it takes societal values out of the hands of institutions. And when I say institutions, I'm speaking very broadly of religion, of the government, of the Supreme Court. And it puts them in the hands of people. It's not that the technology per se wants a certain outcome. It's that human beings desire certain things. And they don't always know that they desire certain things until they're given the opportunity to pursue them. So an example of this would be a phenomenon I explore in Chapter 7 of the book, which is the phenomenon of international online dating, which we used to call the mail order bride business. But when it was moved onto the internet about 10 years ago, they wanted to rebrand the industry because they knew that mail order brides carried an enormous stigma. So now they call it premium international online dating. And I accompanied in the course of my reporting, I went with 17 North American men down to Medellin, Colombia on what they call a romance tour that was arranged by the largest of these sites in the international data sphere. And we spent a week in Colombia. I was following them around as they were introduced in these social events to dozens and dozens of dozens of very beautiful, most of the time younger women from Colombia. And when I started to dig into the statistics around the international dating industry, I found that over the past 5 to 10 years, the men who use these services, they have gotten progressively younger and younger. So whereas before The mail order bride phenomenon was thought to be something that was used mainly by the older men. It's now something that's used by men who are my age. I'm 35, and it's being used by men who are even younger. There was a man who was 28 on the trip. So that would indicate that as this service that is being offered is made available in a more efficient way, in a way that is easier to access, it also becomes used more widely.
I'm curious about how that went for these North American men who went down to Colombia. I mean, did this result in happy matches?
You got to read the book to find out. Come on, we gotta leave a little bit of mystery here. Here is what I will say about that. That was obviously a question I was very interested in, and as the reporter on the trip, following these guys around, I would often pose that question to the men down there, not who were on the romance tour, but who were, you know, working for the website, sort of the concierges down in Colombia. I'd say, look, what are these guys actually down here for? Are they even looking for happy relationships? Are they looking for sex for a week or a night with a young, beautiful Colombian woman? What is the story? And the response that I got back is about was that, you know, approximately a third of the men who come on these trips are there to find someone to marry. About a third of them are there for sex. And the other third don't really know what they want. They're just sort of curious and fascinated by it and maybe a bit bored or maybe looking to take a vacation, and Colombia was as good a place as any. And if I'm going to go to Colombia, why not go on this guided tour where I'm going to meet some people?
And what about the Colombian women?
It depends who you talk to. The majority – so this is a phenomenon that's happening all over the world. I mean, I just happen to go to Colombia, but it's pretty much a thing that is available in any developing country. And it's, you know, increasingly spreading. So the company that I followed down to Colombia also offers these trips to Ukraine, which is one of the oldest spots. So that's sort of almost where the mail order bride industry originated. You can also go all over China. You can go all over Southeast Asia, and most recently, now you can also go to Africa. In the case of Colombia, it's very interesting there because the way their social system works, they have six different strata. And if you're in strata 4, 5, and 6, you pay taxes. And if you're in stratas 1, 2, and 3, you do not. And most of the women that these men were meeting were from stratas 2 and 3. So that's
They were poor,
not
in other
quite
words.
Dire poverty, but most of them came from families that had very, very little. And most of the women seemed to be in this for one reason, and that was for resources. Even if they didn't plan to go back to Alabama or Michigan or Florida or wherever the guy was from that they happened to go on a date with, it was an opportunity to go out for a night in their hometown and have an evening of fun and entertainment that would never otherwise be available to them.